Chaos. Woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, chilling with coffee mugs, me and coffee chugs, talking education all across the nation, pushing boundaries, thinking innovation. Chaos.
Hello everyone, how you doing? Welcome to another episode on Living on the Edge of Chaos podcast. I am so excited for this conversation. This is a guest who, first time truly having a conversation with. She's across the pond, so to speak, here, but I have come across her work probably at the time of this recording, about 3-4 months ago on LinkedIn, which seems to be the place where a lot of my network and actually new learning has kind of shifted. And as I dove into her work and started to see what she was sharing, it aligned so much with what I'm trying to do in education, what I think a lot of people are trying to do, and even what this podcast, which is obviously titled Living on the Edge of Chaos, and where I've really been putting forth a lot of effort trying to figure out how do we find some calm within the chaos of life. And one of my areas that I really have been fascinated with is the power of story, which is just one of many areas that our guest can speak to and shares a lot of just incredible ideas and content around. So I am really excited for this conversation. It's always nice to speak with people beyond just comments and sidebar conversation on social media. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So today I am here with Yvette Larson. So Yvette, you are coming in live from Sweden. So I appreciate you carving out some time with the time zone difference. And so as we start off the show here today, let's have people start off with one, knowing who you are. So who are you? What do you do? And what in the world do you got going on?
Oh, wow. These are big questions. First
they
of all,
are.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for inviting me. And I really look forward to this conversation. Big questions. Who are you? let's narrow it down a little bit in the context of this podcast. But yeah, so I'm living in Sweden. I've lived abroad for a long period of time in my life. So I always say that I see myself quite international, at least more European than just Swedish. I'm a mom of two. I also am a teacher. I teach internationally in an international school, but I also have my own learning and innovation company called AHA, where we are looking into things like exciting things like what does it mean to be human in a global age of technology. We are looking at skills-based learning. We are looking at concept-based learning and other things that I am passionate about. And at the moment, I am focusing a lot on communication, and to tag on to the title of your podcast, like this chaos, like this situation that we are in the world now, like I'm looking at communication in particular and how we can become excellent communicators, excellent team workers, and in our local communities create a better world. So I'm also a mom. I have two kids. They are teenagers, 16 and 19 years old. So I look at learning and innovation also from the perspective of a parent.
I've got three children of my own. I have a 19-year-old son that's in college for the first year. I've got a junior daughter and a junior high daughter. So I'm seeing all those three different levels of thinking back, more importantly, around, you know, what is the purpose of education, you know, not just within the brick and mortar walls, but, you know, outside of how we do this as a community and leverage all these things. And so I'm right there in the same boat with you. And I want to get to that question that you posed earlier. But before we do, you know, I'm curious, this kind of journey that you're on, where you have lived internationally and you have this interest and passion with your company as well as in your classroom, you know, around all these ideas of what it means to be human in a global age of technology. What I'm curious about, and this is kind of connecting to my comic book nerdiness of like the origin stories of superheroes and their superpowers, what has drawn you to this space to explore? What about that concept? And I know there's more to it than just the technology side of what it means to be human, but what has drawn you to that, where your work is the thread and through line through all of your posts? You know, it's not just communication, it's story, it's looking at the human side, it's looking at all the different elements. What has brought you to this point where you're like, man, this is what I think is really important?
I think I have a very big interest in us humans, like why we do the things we do and what is the reason. So I am passionate about neuroscience. I'm passionate about history of humans and how we developed. So I think that is the main thing. And I think it goes back to my early days when I was choosing to study at senior high school. I was choosing to do humanistic studies. It was all about language, history, art. So these things attracted me ever since I was a kid. And I'm also looking into like art as a way of storytelling. And later on now, those previous, I would say, 4 or 5 years, I've been drawn very much into applied neuroscience and thinking about how the knowledge in applied neuroscience can actually help us to create those good relationships, not only in schools, but in general, in our families, with friends, with colleagues. And of course, because I'm working in the school environment, that's been my prime area. And looking at also how quick things changes when I, as a teacher, know something about oxytocin. And if I spray my room with oxytocin and I see my students, I meet them with warmth, something happens there. If I choose to see the fun in things, endorphins, I will have a classroom that is more communicative, more creative, more collaborative, and it really, really works. And I also been doing same type of work with adults, and people are always very interested to learn more. And I think this is an area when you work with people, this is really an area that is sort of it's just in the beginning, I think, because if you want to create those peaceful communities, it's such a help.
So I love that. And I've been following some of your work, and you've been really diving in a lot into the neuroscience of things, which is to me so fascinating, as we can start to actually put some of the science and the latest research to topics that we've all been talking about forever. And I think that's one of the things that I appreciate most about a lot of your work is there's lots of people that talk about relationships. There's lots of people that talk about the importance of communication. But what I like that you bring is that layer of like, what's like the neuroscience behind the importance of that. And so as you were talking, and I'm thinking about the idea of story, I'm thinking about, we've mentioned communication, how important that is. Could you talk a little bit more about that? You mentioned oxytocin, you've mentioned some of these things, but I'm also thinking about the audience who's going, what in the world is she talking about? Because I want to also make sure they probably don't get that confused with like oxycodone and like, oh, she's giving drugs to kids. It's not that either. It's complete opposite. And I know that's not what it is, but because it's so talk some more about that piece, because that is so fascinating.
Yeah, that's a very valid question, actually. So, you know, when you get totally goofy about something and you just talk about the words and terms and everything. So first of all, applied neuroscience is a transdisciplinary genre. So it combines human evolution, how we developed, how our brain developed, like our old brain, and how that is more geared onto intuition, reaction, feelings, reading faces. And then our new brain is more geared onto executive function, planning, strategy, and so forth. And then we also have, because that is also a battle that we have, that humans have, why we develop bias, because it's the constant battle between our rational part and our emotional part. And if we do a little bit of an experiment throughout the day, we would notice that most of our decisions, except for maybe work, are often made through our emotions. We do things, we want to do things that we like, we don't want to things that we dislike, and so forth. But then comes also something that also you were mentioning, a lot of people talking about communication, relationship building, small things that you discover when you start to study in your applied neuroscience is also the concept of trust. Because we know that trust is the foundation of relationships, but we don't sort of know, we don't ask more questions. And the thing is that trust, for example, with every human interaction that you have, with every encounter you have with everyone, you scan the situation. Is this a psychologically trusting situation? You and I did that when we started to talk. We do it with everyone we meet. And it happens so fast. And if it is a trusting situation, then we will be more collaborative, more creative, and more communicative. And when you know about these things, then it's like, why wouldn't we want that? So if we bring that into the area of education, if we are not creating situations with trust, students will learn. They will learn, but maybe some will learn out of fear, but then they will also associate learning with some element of fear. So that is also a new mindset. And also the component of play, enjoyment, and fun. That can, I know you are very engaged in STEM and STEAM, I think.
Yeah.
And when you play, when you investigate, when you explore things, like that is also an element. I'm teaching high school now, and I think that is an element that is almost gone missing when you reach the higher levels. But I think that we really need to take fun and play seriously. Like that is when the students remember the most, like go to ourselves. If something is fun and we want to do it again, hey, dopamine kicks in and we want more. So these are some of the things that teachers in my school, they are curious about, and putting it into the context of well-being as well, then it's so usable.
It is, yeah. There's so much to unpack there. And you mentioned play there, which grabbed my attention because I've been really focused on this idea of purposeful play. And how do we weave that back into the curriculum of schools? And you talked about it's missing at the secondary level with older kids, but it's also becoming stripped away more and more, even at the younger ages, as there's so much push and pressure for standardization of tests and catching up because of COVID and whatever the social narrative needs to be to create this sense of panic that schools and teachers aren't doing enough. Now, I'm not here to say we shouldn't always be looking to improve, because we can, but like as a result of that, we've lost the human side of that. And part of the work I've been wrapping my head around is this idea of like human pedagogy and bringing that idea of play back in. Like, and I do that with adults in workshops, and you can see them walk in, and professional development is not something most of us get excited about when it's that forced, you know, within the school day, and they're kind of lean back and not engaged. And I bring in the Lego, and even if they're resistant at first, it doesn't take long before all of a sudden the bodies start to lean in, and there's some smiles and there's stories. And then to bring it back to be like, this feeling you're feeling, this is what our kids should feel. And we're not just doing like a hoorah, like there is intent and purpose behind it all, but we can also layer and play with that. Like, so you're talking about the dopamine hits, and I'm like, that's the space that I love. And so love it that you brought that up.
Yeah, that's the creativity, that's the immersive learning. And actually, because I'm so passionate about innovation and entrepreneurship in any learning situation. And if you also look at evolution of humans, that is also how we learned. Like we tried, we explored, we tried again. And if there was no element of like the ceiling is high and we can try and we can play around it, then many of the things we see now wouldn't even be here.
Yeah. And with that, you talked the importance there that you said the word trust, which I think is so vital. Both I'm thinking education, and I'm thinking in our personal lives as well, how important that is and how that connects to relationships. And when I think about classrooms and I think about working with students and even working with the adults, I like to start off, and sometimes people look at me crazy, like, let's look at our learning spaces. Is the space, and by the space, I don't mean like we have desks and chairs, but like the environment that we're around, does it truly allow for innovation and vulnerability? And so often we overlook that piece. It's like, we can have the best lesson, we can have the awesomest, coolest, greatest idea, but if the space doesn't allow us to feel safe, to be vulnerable, to put a new idea out, to try something that might not work, you're going to get 30 of the same answers, because that's what we also are going to tend to safety. So I talk a lot about that relationship piece and that trust, and how we truly put in and model our actions to allow those ideas to work. And so I'm curious, because that's a space that it makes sense in my head that I want to continue to expand on. How are you handling that in your classroom and in the work that you do, and even connected to neuroscience, you have so many different layers in which I know you're grappling with this. And I know relationships are really important, but that connects, I think, to the space we put ourselves in.
Absolutely. First of all, I want to connect back to what you were saying to create that atmosphere in the classroom. And I connect that also to the concept of courage, because you also, when you feel trust and when you feel that the ambiance in the room is a good one, you also become more courageous. And when we are courageous, then we are also more open to try new things. But if I look back to how I work with it, I think because I've been working with it for such a long time, it's like putting a puzzle, pieces of puzzle together. Like, for example, let me start in the school environment. If I have a class, I always try to stand outside the classroom before the students arrive. I have 13 to 17 years old now, so I have a chance to chat with them a little bit and check in with them. So I really try to see everyone, at least say, hi, how are you? How's the weekend? You know, just checking in on people. So before I go into the classroom, I already created, I can see that if somebody is super happy, I ask, what did you have for lunch? I want that too. Or somebody is a little bit sad or something. What's going on? Do you need my help? Like, just checking in on people. And that is the oxytocin and serotonin boost. Like, hey, I see you. What's going on in your life? And I'm here for you. And then, of course, dopamine, that is creating, trying to create some excitement for learning, because I think also with teenagers, like, engagement can go very much up and down. And so I'm really trying to work with how I design my classes, with questions and for like really inquiry-based learning. I'm working in an IB school, so it's a lot around that inquiry-based learning as well, naturally. So lots of fascinating facts, standing up. I was also creating a well-being program during COVID for the younger years. And it was easier to implement because they have class teachers. It's more difficult with the specialist teachers. But then we were also focusing a lot on social-emotional learning and teamwork and just to be able to see another person. Like, imagine if you came to work and nobody said hi. That is like that is like how I explain to my students about serotonin, like why they need to say hi to everyone, why they need to ask if they see somebody walking by themselves, like, hey, do you want to come to lunch with us? That little question can change the day for a human being. And so that is serotonin. I introduce dopamine for them when they, like, with two pictures, dopamine is two-edged. I have one with a mountain climber, and the other one is the mobile phone. So they can choose in which way they want to use their dopamine. So we have like honest conversations about that. And of course, I introduce cortisol as well. Cortisol is like two-edged too. That is when we feel fear, or when we are polarized or angry, or those types of feelings when we feel stressed. But cortisol was also the neurotransmitter that sort of is for alertness, and it actually made humans survive. So it has two sides. But when they learn about these things, I taught even 10-year-olds about this. Then they remember. They can identify what's going on, and then they can use it in the life. And I use it in my private life with my partner, with my kids, with my parents. And especially when you come to a situation where you're maybe a little bit stressed out or not your best self, then you sort of can pull yourself back and think, okay, Yvette, come on, cool off, or whatever you need to do. So I think it's very, very useful in all relationships, like both like one-to-one, in small groups, in bigger groups. And for example, we are planning a community day, and what we're going to finish is with our, what I call, I see you circle. I was inspired by Avatar film.
So good.
Yeah. And so we're standing in a circle, and everyone needs to say something positive in the person standing next to you, which is a super simple idea. But the thing is also, when you hear others speaking nicely and kindly to each other, oxytocin is produced in you. when you see people are being nice to each other, oxytocin is produced in you. And the same thing goes with cortisol. If you hear people are being angry around you or screaming or, I don't know, then cortisol is produced in you. So it's good to be aware of those things, I think.
Yeah. Gosh, thanks for sharing all that. You know, as you were talking about that ICU circle, and of course, I had to like think about the whale in the movie and everything. You know, one of the things that resonates in some of the projects that I do, in particular with one school with some incredible educators, is we will do a lot of work where kids are authentically like engaged, kind of self-driven. Once we get them to a stage where they've identified the problem they want to solve within the constraints of the project, but we'll wrap up. Not all the time, because you don't want to overdo it, but we call it a circle of support, a community circle. And one of the things that's really cool that this teacher brought in from actually our Iowa women's college basketball program, which is very popular right now in the States, is at the end of all their practices, when they stand in a circle to wrap up practice, it's not just standing in a circle, but all their feet have to connect, like the sides of their feet. And that brings this like togetherness, that there's no gaps, we're all part of this and we're all equal.
Yeah.
And so we've applied that, and the idea, you know, at first it takes a couple sessions, and we just have the kids share and celebrate something positive that they saw or someone helped them with. And at first, you know, if you and I are close friends, I might say something to you about you. Mm-hmm. But over time, they start to see the value, when all of a sudden, like, oh man, like Joe over here actually really, he kind of said something nice about me. I didn't even know that my action helped him. And it does spread. And man, you can just feel weight being lifted off the shoulders of kids when they get acknowledged. Yeah. And we don't even force it. At first, we're like, we're not here to make everybody say something. So usually the first couple, it's kind of quiet. We're like, all right, you know, because we got to like put our money where our mouth is. But then over time, man, you almost have to build more time, because they're like, oh, she helped me and he helped me and blah, 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 blah. And next thing you know, it's like, it's a positive exchange of energy, which is, it's so great.
Yes. Yeah. But that is basically the same thing we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to segue here a little bit, talking about all this, because you and your work, you pose two questions time and time again. And so I'm interested in kind of where your headspace is with answers to the questions that you pose to all of us. And those are one of the questions you shared at the top of the hour, of what does it mean to be human in a global age of technology? And you have another really powerful question that hits to a lot of what I'm trying to wrap my head around as well, is what happens if we educate the heart first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to make everything about AI, but AI is also, I think, kind of aligns with these questions, because I think what the beauty of AI has done is it's kind of been a mirror of us looking back at ourselves as humanity, going, man, what have we overlooked? And so where are you, or what are you learning? What are you seeing in terms of those questions and this kind of, you know, this global age of technology? In this case, this time of being, it definitely AI is, that's on the minds and hearts of everybody.
Yes. It's like the pre and the post ChatGPT in a way.
Yes, it is.
but let's say, like, I was always very curious about technology, and because I have a very humanistic, classic background, it may sound very crazy, but I also like crazy anchoring and twisting ideas to create something new. And so that's why I think a lot of people get confused when they talk to me, because they see me as like, oh, she's doing classic language and all that. And then all of a sudden pops up all those talking about technology. But it comes back again to, how can I, let's say you and I, we live for 100 years. Let's say that we are super lucky to live 100 years. What do I want to do with those 100 years? And how can I live the best way? And how can I mean something for my communities? And how can I be a good parent and partner and whatever it is I'm doing, so I can just have my best life? And how can I leave this, it sounds cheesy, but how can I leave this place a better place and make my communities as good as they can? And I think that if I look at the meeting point where the analog life and the digital life meet, that's a very interesting place, because it's not only technology, because technology has been there forever, like the Egyptians, they made the pyramids. So it's not like technology as per se, but it's more like now it's going so fast. And how are we sort of addressing that? And in a school community, like how are teachers, how are we able to use some of the AI tools? I am working in a school, and I mean, teachers are just learning. The students are ahead of the game, and so they are the teachers, and we are the learners in a way. And I think also that from my starting point, with the technology that we have, I love technology when it makes us humans thrive better. Like when we can, for example, you and I, we're having this conversation. You're in the US and I'm in Sweden, and there is time difference and everything, but we see each other and we can have a really good conversation. Then I love technology. It's like, wow. And if I work and I'm working on a unit, let's say I'm creating a new unit and I want to have a unit descriptor, I plug in a few keywords and ChatGPT pops out with an amazing formulated unit descriptor that I don't have to spend so much time on, because I want to spend time with the students, with methodology. So all those types of things that can help me, then I love technology. Of course, we have the question of governance with ChatGPT, with AI. Of course, there are huge challenges when it comes to cyber, cyber attacks and so forth. But I think with all, every time there is something new, there is this this point where we have to stop and think, what is good for us? How are we going to use it? There will always be people using technology in bad ways and good ways. If you invent a knife, you can cut bread with it, but you can also do horrible things with it. So it's more like, I think the challenge now is that the technology is just, the development of AI, for example, is going so fast. So if we look at governance, it's not really catching up. It's sort of running behind. And these are the things that may be problematic. But I'm more looking at it from a more philosophical way and more hands-on at the same time. Like when technology is there and I'm looking at teenagers, then I'm just thinking like social media for teenagers, what does it mean to be human? Do they learn how to read a face when most communication goes on in the written format? Do they learn how to solve challenges face to face? What goes on in their lives and all the well-being decline that we see amongst teenagers? That is also things that worries me. But when there is something that worries me, my default is thinking, how can we make it better? How can we create something that is better? But also, I'm the type of person who has Snapchat and I have my little AI there because I want to know what's going on in the life of teenagers. So then I can also discuss with them and I can be honest with them. Like my students, they know that I'm very much into AI and ChatGPT and all those kinds of things. And then they open up and then you have an honest conversation. So...
Yeah, and I think they have just as many questions as we do. You know, they may not always. I still get excited about all new things, and I don't know that. I always say, like, I call it the blah generation. I don't mean that like as a diss to my own children, but like they just don't get as excited about things. Like, I don't know if it's just because I was like pre-internet days, and then I saw the internet days. Like, I feel like I've been able to live through all this stuff, and then like, I ask them, like, what about AI? They're like, you know, and they use it, but they're not like blown away. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, it's the greatest thing ever, you know. And as you were talking about that with social media, and you're talking about those things, and I know you have a background like in the classics, I'm curious, has that shifted maybe not your approach, but your thinking to the classics and how you teach? And here's like the reason that I asked, because something that I have discovered in myself, in my personal learning journey, where I use AI on a daily basis, but it has me going back to things that I used to learn. For example, I've been really nerding out on like creating like AI images and visuals.
Yeah.
And why I can put in prompts, I'm going back to like in high school when I took photography classes and I had a manual camera that I had to know about f-stops and aperture speed, and I had to know about lighting. And then I actually like went into the dark room and I produced my own film. And now like that, all that information went out of my brain with the advent of the iPhone, and I could just point and click. But now I'm coming back and I'm like, this is so important. These technical skills are vital in a different way. So it's a long, that was a kind of a long route for me to ask, like, as you are someone, I see the books you read and the things you share and the things you do, you're into the classics. Does that shift how you approach that, or does it not have any impact on that?
I think that is a very valid question. I was actually thinking of writing an article about this, but I think it's more like somebody said to me before Christmas, a colleague said, oh, gosh, we are going to stop writing poetry now when ChatGPT is in the picture. And I said to them, no, we won't, because humans, we have an innate need to express ourselves. And we want, if we look at the art, for example, we want to express art. We want to express ourselves. With, you were mentioning storytelling. Storytelling is the glue. Like, so I think that I just add things. So if there is art, then there is digital art and there is analog art. And now we add another type of art that demands also other skills for us. So if we are sort of reading digital art, we also need to become better at critical thinking to read pictures online. But I also, because I also did media communication and those types of journalistic studies, I remember a conversation we had at university that any picture is any picture real. That is just a replica of realization, because I will always frame my picture somehow. So you have this, what is real and what is not real. I actually did it. I have a project that is called What is Real? Wow. And then you can make a lot of provocations from that. So I think that adding digital art is just another version of art where you have to use other skills. Some people like to draw portraits. Some people like to do collage. Some people like to express themselves through digital art. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I love that. That project sounds incredible. It's got me thinking. Yeah, what is real? That's some deep
questions. We started that project because it was 6 weeks with my, how old are they? 15 years old. And we started with Plato's The Cave, where the So they were looking and it was like, what is this? I hadn't read any of Homer yet. So we started there and we finished with, there is this AI generated conversation between, I think it's Bill Gates and Socrates, and they are talking about AI. It's brilliant. So you go from Plato to AI and everything in between. It's really, really interesting. And their views as well, and how their questions, and because that's what I think is, when we're into education also, to create those questions. When students have questions, then I know we're going in the right direction. They become curious about things.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's, you know, as you're sharing all that, it sparks another thought that I was speaking to somebody and just in a sidebar conversation, and we're just talking about the idea of reading the classics or anything anymore, like what are the stuff that we've taught, and the idea, like, is there even a purpose to it? And I think maybe there's a shift from, hey, read this book and then write this essay at the end about whatever. And now I was like, we started to get into this really cool conversation. It wasn't fleshed out about, we start to read and we study authors or artists or filmographers, whatever the space might be, to understand their tone and their style and how they are able to convey ideas and bring emotions out of people. So it's not like I'm going to read The Great Gatsby so I can then write a final essay. It's, you know, how did the author, what was the style of the author? And then how can I then start to interpret that? Not so I can use it for AI, which maybe that's a byproduct, but like understand expression, communicate. It's kind of what we've been talking about, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I love what a great shift where we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, saying everything has to go away. But maybe we are at a point where if kids aren't engaged in some of the stuff that we think are important, how do we shift how we utilize it in our thinking that can then also, for their world, and you know, they are in an AI world, they can also then start to apply some of that, you know, in their own personal life and AI work and, you know, everything else. Everything has to be AI driven, but it's also the reality that we're in.
Absolutely. I'm thinking of something when we talk about, because I am a language teacher as well, so how to work with stories and how to learn about yourself and the world you live in through those stories. That tags along a little bit what you are saying. And I was also thinking, I was in Rome during the Christmas break, and we were in Foro Romano, which is the heart of history in Europe, you can say. It depends, but at least in Italy, I don't want
to... Yeah.
But then there were also those guides that you can have. So you can do like this VR guides. And I thought, amazing. Imagine if we have that in schools. So if you have a history lesson, you could actually go into the world of classic Rome, or you could go into the world. And I know that there are schools that are actually using those. But I think the big part of schools, the majority of schools, they are not there yet. But I think, for example, if you look at private schools, then I think they're a little bit ahead of the game. But what an amazing immersive experience for a student. I was seeing a wonderful exhibition of Salvador Dalí in, it was called Salvador Dalí Cybernetics. The same thing, you put on the VR glasses and you go basically into his art.
Oh, it was,
think about Salvador Dalí, a surrealistic art, and you're in there.
Oh,
it was so fun.
Yeah. I'm sure that was a real mind warp.
So I think all those things, when it comes to AI, it opens up amazing possibility. And then it's up to us how we are going to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tale as old as time when we can say that, you know, technology is neither good or bad. It's the humans behind it. And I think there's that call. I mean, coming back to, you know, kind of full circles, we wrap up, be respectful of your time. Like, you know, how do we teach to the heart? And what does that mean to be human in this digital, you know, landscape that we're in? You know, I think some of that is yes, there's some those skills we got to teach on how to do those things. But really, are we helping humanity be better? You know, what does that look like? Not that it's our full responsibility, but education can definitely play a role. So I want to segue to our last segment here before we do run out of time. And I have two kind of final questions here for you, just kind of bring it back and a little bit, learn a little bit more about you, and then we'll finish up where people can follow along in, because I know they're going to want to dive in and see all the work you've got going on. But the question that I have for you that I started asking people in this new season of the podcast is, you know, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
The best piece of advice, I think it's about growth mindset. And I think it's from my mom. That's maybe not so unusual. she was referring back to, it's a Latin American legend, I think, and it goes something to the, which wolf are you feeding? The wolf who is constructive, or the wolf who is bringing you down? And that was about growth mindset. And my mom is very much about growth mindset. So I think that she's been feeding me the type of growth mindset vocabulary all my life. And as an adult now, I can see the type of conversations that I have. So I think, I think that is the best. I think that is a life skill that I can use myself, and that I'm spreading also to the way I speak, I guess. What a good question.
Yeah, I love that. That's a, God bless our moms, right? So the last one that I have is, this is called a rant or rave. And so this is a chance for you to share. It can be something that maybe we didn't talk about that you want to make sure you get out, but it can also be on anything. A book, a movie, song, something happening in society that you think you just not saying want to get off your chest, but maybe celebrate, or something that's on your mind. And I've done this now with just a few guests. And, oh, man, it's kind of wild. I know that you are a crazy book reader, and you've got all sorts of things. So it doesn't have to be a book. I'm not nudging that direction.
But no, I think I talked a lot about that now. I want to give away something that we didn't talk about at all, and that is that up here where I live, we have a tradition of going winter swimming. And that is something that is boosts well-being. So we are basically swimming in the cold water, and then we do sauna. And after that, we feel energized and ready for the day. It's both exciting, it's calming, it's a little bit crazy, it's beautiful, it's immersive with nature, and I just love it.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Do you do a cold plunge like every day? Like, I know there's people around here that have built their own little like tubs of craziness cold.
Yeah, no. I guess I go once per week during the weekend. Ooh. I went yesterday. It was 3.2 degrees.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, mm-hmm. Well, man, this has been, yeah, that's got me, I need to refill my coffee and warm up just thinking about it. So, yes. I have yet to do it. Maybe that'll be my own challenge to overcome that, because
It's fantastic.
I wouldn't say scared. I don't know that I'm quite ready for the experience, but I hear all the amazing, incredible health benefits of definitely doing
health
that.
Health benefits, so. And that is talk about a neurotransmitter cocktail. That is everything. Yeah.
There it is. Well, Yvette, this has been so great to talk with you and hear your voice and chat back and forth. And so I know that this is going to spark a lot of interest for the listeners. For those that want to follow you or learn more about your work, things of that, we'll get into all this stuff in the show notes. You know, where are the best places for them to track you down and add you to their network?
Yeah, so the best place would be at LinkedIn, of course. And then I'm also quite active on Instagram. So it's the professional and the private side there. So, yeah, the two.
Perfect. We'll get those linked in the show notes. And I can't thank you enough for joining me on the show. This is a wonderful start to my day here in Iowa. And I know you're getting ready to, you're heading towards the evening of your day. So I appreciate you making some time here to make this happen. And keep doing what you're doing. Keep spreading all the wonderful insights. And I'm blessed that our paths have crossed on LinkedIn to allow me to keep learning from you. So greatly, greatly appreciate you taking time today.
And the same, Aaron, thank you so much for inviting me, and keep inspiring us.
Absolutely.
Chaos. Woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, chilling with Coffee Mugs, me and Coffee Chugs, talking education all across the nation, pushing boundaries, thinking innovation. Chaos.